Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Do you think free agency's already started in the NBA? NBA Finals still going on. Maybe not for much longer. Might be over on Monday. Toronto taking the commanding 3-1 lead last night. You can continue to weigh in on that as the show rolls along. But it feels to me, and I'm not saying I know this, I know that there is real truth to the Kyrie Nets interest, but it feels to me almost as if Kyrie Irving has already chosen the Nets, and the team is now using that as leverage to make another move, whatever that may be. And they made the trade with Atlanta, and basically what they did was they traded, the way I look at it, they traded one first-round pick for Torian Prince, who could be pretty good for them. He's a rotation player. He would actually, if the season started today for them, would probably be their starting power forward. And they traded another draft pick to move Allen Crabbe's contract so that they could open up two max spaces. So that would give them the ability to sign Kyrie Irving and... So Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, or Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler, or Kyrie Irving and whomever. You know what I'm saying. Two max slots. Which would also allow them to sign Kyrie Irving and re-sign D'Angelo Russell, if that's the way they choose to go. Or gives them the opportunity to sign Kyrie and trade for Anthony Davis, for instance. So there's a lot of moves that the Nets can make. And the only one that seems to be like a certainty is strong. Kyrie could change his mind. Maybe we're reading too much into it. But when I see Adrian Wojnarowski tweet, Kyrie Irving is serious about the Nets, and the Nets are serious about beating the Knicks and the rest of the league to the biggest free agents in the marketplace, it gives me the sense that there is something at play, especially when the Nets make that trade when they did it. You know, they've been preparing for this. Don't get me wrong. They know what they're doing. And I've made the sell for Brooklyn over the Knicks for a while. The Knicks, there would never be anything like winning a championship for the Knicks. Like, you would be a hero. You would be a legend for eternity if you won with the Knicks. But is that a realistic thing? And do you want to work for the guy who owns the Knicks? When you talk about the term owner, do you want that guy to be the guy in charge of you? Like, you know, I would have a problem with that as an employee. And you look at the, you know, general dysfunction. So I think the sell of Brooklyn would be, you get to create the identity. You know, the Knicks have an identity, good or bad. They have a massive fan base, a passionate fan base, sometimes to a fault, but sometimes admirable, you know, like that they're so passionate still, despite everything. The Nets are trying to cultivate that, they're trying to build that. So they don't really have a history. You have a New Jersey Nets history, but I almost look at it as a different franchise now. There's not really a Brooklyn Nets history. So you have a chance to become the face of a franchise, period, while also having the market. It's Brooklyn. It's, you know, New York. In some ways, you know, branded a little cooler at times. It's without the drama. You know, you have a franchise that clearly knows what they're doing, well run. And look at where they were. I mean, after that Celtics trade, I've always said, like, Sean Marks, who's the GM there, was tasked with emerging from a bomb shelter and rebuilding civilization. And just in a couple years with no assets, they got D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Spencer Dinwiddie, a nice little young core, made the playoffs, and are now positioned as big-time powerhouses in a huge offseason. That is impressive. And that shows you that the franchise knows what it's doing. It's well run, which is a big sell for guys. And then, especially for guys like Durant and Kyrie, there's not a hostile relationship with the media there. There's a bit of a hostile relationship with the media and the Knicks because the Knicks have been so bad for so long that the media criticized the Knicks, critical of the Knicks, and the Knicks, the way they're run, they don't respond well to criticism and critique. They're kind of paranoid. And it just created this, like, standoff. You know, reporters get banned and, there's just this friction and there's this vibe. So I think anyone who goes there is inheriting that spirit a little bit. So that would be like, I'm in a, you know, trying to be as objective as possible in that. Just, again, any Knicks fan who would respond, hey, look at the crowds, look at the net worth of the franchise, look at the all this other stuff is 100% correct. Look at what it would mean to win a title in MSG. But on the other side of it, you could look at it and say, hey, I have a chance to create something over here and I don't have to deal with all that. So that's the case there. And it looks like a case that Kyrie Irving may already be sold on. 855-212-4227. What do you make of the idea of Kyrie Irving to the Nets? Just individually and how it could affect everything else. 855-212-4227. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's go to Nico in California. Nico, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, I'm a huge fan of the show. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to bring up a question that I personally don't feel is being asked enough. I think Kyrie would do great in Brooklyn solo, but specifically to Kevin Durant's free agency, are we sure that's a good idea for him to do that? Because Kevin left an Oklahoma City team that he felt they had a point guard that couldn't lead them, and Kyrie left a Cleveland team where he didn't want to be second fiddle. Well, we'd be going back to both of those all over again. And so I don't think for Kevin, if he's going to leave this Dynasty Warriors team, it would be the best option to go pair up with Kyrie again with all the turmoil he had in Boston. It was supposed to be the deepest team in the East this year.
No, I understand that. And maybe we also oversimplify a little bit what exactly these guys want. You know, I don't know if, you know, did Kyrie want to be the man? It seems like it, right? But how much of it also was he wanted to get away from whatever was going on behind the scenes in Cleveland? You know, Kyrie is a different sort of cat, for better or worse. You know, he goes to Boston. He was also the man in Boston, so he already got that. So if he's going to Brooklyn, you can't really think it's because he wants to be the man, right? He got that in a heritage sports franchise. Like, so there has to be other motivations behind that. As far as Durant, I think what Durant wants is just like some fulfillment, basically. He wants validation. And he thought, and this is me playing amateur psychologist, armchair psychologist, so it's not really fair. But this, you know, to me, I think he thought a ring would be that. And that's why he went to Golden State. And he got two rings. And now he saw he wasn't exactly validated for those rings. So I think he wants that validation as a player. And he's a great player. There, you know, anyone who says otherwise is a complete fool. But there's a difference in the way things mean for your overall perception. He wants to be considered the best player in the league, and he wants, you know, to feel more validated, I think, than he did in Golden State. Now, maybe that could be repaired in Golden State, or most likely he probably has to go somewhere else. But we shall see. I mean, that's what I think is so intriguing about this offseason. It really does feel like a reset of the league, right? You know, part of the league was reset with LeBron not being in the finals and leaving the Cavs and going to the Lakers and whatever's going on with that. And then this will be the second half of it with the Warriors no longer being the Warriors anymore and talent being distributed a little bit differently. You know, where KD and Kyrie and Jimmy and Kemba and all those guys wind up has an impact on which teams are competing. Kawhi, I forgot to mention Kawhi. Could Kawhi really leave? Like, is there any way Kawhi Leonard could possibly? I mean, I know he's a different dude too. It's funny because we're dealing with so many different types of personalities. Everybody's a different person from another, but especially different, right? Doesn't it feel like it? Especially the top three guys, even in the top four, if you consider Jimmy Butler the fourth guy, you really got four guys who are all wired in a very specific way. You know, Kyrie's got the big eye of whatever they call it in the dollar bill pyramid attitude going on, and Kevin Durant has like the, you know, I'm battling with you online insecurity thing going on, despite being a great player. Jimmy Butler has the, you know, like, I want you to compete to the very end, and I'm going to, you know, ride around in my pickup truck attitude going on. And then Kawhi Leonard has the, like, who could possibly read this guy? Because, you know, he has no emotions. And then when you do ask him a question, he answers it in, like, this matter-of-fact, deadpan, wry way. Like, you can't get a read on any of these guys completely. Jimmy's probably the one who you can get the best read on. The rest of them, I don't know. Would it surprise you if they were all committed to one place today and then changed their mind completely the next day because of some sort of petty reason even? You know, like, Katie could see, like, a writer write something about him and be like, no, I'm not doing that anymore because the guy wrote it. And Kyrie, I don't know, he could check his Ouija board or whatever and not like whatever happened because of that. And Kawhi, I just don't know what's going on with it. Like, but could Kawhi really leave Toronto after all this? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. At Robin Lundberg on Twitter. That's RobinLundberg. All right, I said it before. I will get to whether any supposed GOAT has it easier than Roger Federer. Again, I don't talk tennis that much, but I saw some things yesterday that piqued my interest as Nadal was sweeping Federer away. It is the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm still laughing about Kawhi Leonard being asked after the game last night what it would mean for the city of Toronto and for Canada if the Raptors were to win. And he said, I don't really know. You're going to have to ask somebody on the street. His reactions in those moments are pretty priceless. We'll get back to that in just a minute. I wanted to touch on something because this is not my area of expertise, but I found it curious. You know, I've sort of just generally accepted when the tennis community tells you Roger Federer is the greatest tennis player of all time. I'm like, okay. I mean, all these people are telling me this. It must be true, right? You look up his record, and certainly impressive. He's the most accomplished, I think. That is a fair thing to say. But then, like, Nadal obliterates him, right, the other day. And I know this is not their primes or anything like that. I'm not reading into that result. It's not about Nadal the other day, yesterday, beating him in straight sets. But because of that, and I was covering it, I looked up their head-to-head record. And I was very surprised. Because you hear this thing about Nadal, like the king of clay. Yeah, he has totally owned Roger Federer on clay. And Federer's never beaten him at the French Open and whatnot. But overall, head-to-head, Nadal has the advantage over Federer. I think it's 23-15. And in non-clay majors, Grand Slams, he's also beaten Federer head-to-head, 4-3. So you're telling me the supposed GOAT's chief rival has owned him, right? Head-to-head, Nadal beats Federer, period, full stop. Totally has the advantage on clay, has the advantage overall, and even won the seven-game series in Grand Slams off clay, on grass. Did you also know that Novak Djokovic has beaten Roger Federer head-to-head? The other guy, like, who has the best... So, I don't know if it's just because people don't pay as much attention to tennis or this isn't talked about so much, but it's not like it's a team sport where you can blame other factors. Like, in the team sports, I always think sometimes people go crazy with the ring stuff when there's so many other factors. This is an individual sport. There's nobody else in it. It's just you, bro. So... I can't imagine, like, if that was a GOAT in another sport, I feel like that would be pointed out so much more. You know, even in football, even Tom Brady gets the stuff about Eli Manning and the Giants, right? Or if he didn't have Belichick, you get something, even though he's the unanimous kind of GOAT. And going up against Manning and the Giants, that's part of the team factor that comes in. LeBron obviously gets a whole bunch of crap. It feels like everywhere that happens. And yet, for Roger Federer, it's just like, oh, yeah, he's the greatest tennis player of all time. And I'm not saying that's even wrong, right? Like, I'm not saying that's wrong. And again, he's the most accomplished. But I do find it curious that he can be considered the greatest of all time and his chief rival has the advantage over him. And then the other guy who's also considered like the best of the other best of the era has beaten him head to head. Because if it's not Federer, it's Nadal and Djokovic, right? And those guys have both beaten Federer head to head in an individual sport. So I guess it has to be because we just don't scrutinize or talk about tennis like that. Because he's in a good spot. I envy Roger Federer. No other GOAT has it that easy. 855-212-4227. Anthony, Brian, why do you think that is? Is it because I'm probably the only person who's talked about tennis on the air in the last few days?
Which is strange also, just because, I mean, you mentioned those. We're talking about maybe the three greatest tennis players of all time, yeah. All currently, you know, playing, and they've been. And so just overall, it's kind of surprising that maybe tennis doesn't get as much play as it used to. 70s and 80s, of course, were really popular in America. But the fact that there's no good American really tennis player, especially on the male side, probably hurts the sport as well. But you would think Nadal too. I would think his dominance on the clay would maybe even strengthen the argument of possibly putting him above Federer as the greatest of all time, just because of how dominant he has been. He's won 11 times. Yeah. At the French Open, and I believe just in clay in general, I think he's like 58, like an 8 all time in tournament finals just on clay.
What I find particularly head scratching about it is it being an individual sport. Again, I talked about the Giants and Tom Brady, but Tom Brady bested Peyton Manning throughout their careers, and that was the argument for a while. But there's factors there, right? Like, why did the Giants beat the Patriots? So they got a pressure on Brady, you know, obviously the Manningham, all these crazy plays happen throughout it. It's a team sport. Same thing with basketball, team sport. Tennis is not. So if you're saying who is better and you're playing one another and one guy more consistently beats the other guy, is he then not better than that guy? So what makes Federer better than Nadal and Djokovic if they're beating him head to head? Because he's better against the other players in the field? Does that make you better? If you dominate the lesser competition, but you're not as good against the better competition? I just found it was intriguing to me. Because I've been told that Federer is, that's it, he's the GOAT. You know, like you see that all the time. Oh, Federer, the GOAT, nobody could. And then I look at it and I go, wait a second, the guys that are right next to him beat him. You know, the guy who it's fine, it's Nadal and Federer yet again. Nadal has a significant advantage over Federer head-to-head. 855-212-4227. Let's go to Bob in Nashville, Tennessee. Bob, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, I think you have to look at the overall career. I remember back in the 70s, the Pittsburgh Steelers won 4 Super Bowls, but they would lose consistently to the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't think it really mattered.
But that's you a team. That's a team versus a team, not an individual versus an individual.
Which career do you want? Do you want Federer's? You want Nadal's? Nadal dominates, you said, on clay, but it's only a 4-3 advantage off clay. So I'll take Federer's career over Nadal's, regardless of the minor head-to-head stats.
Sure. I mean, look, and that's an argument to be made. I just found it, it was way less clear to me than I would have thought it would be. You know, I would have thought, all right, Nadal had the advantage on clay, but Federer had the advantage everywhere else. And then when I saw, no, actually, Nadal has beaten him everywhere else. Nadal's beaten him overall, I think 23-15. He's beaten him in Grand Slams off clay, 4-3. And he's wiped the floor with him on clay. And then, not just that, but Djokovic, who's the other guy of this era, has also beaten Federer head-to-head. So I've been in a lot of GOAT conversations before in other sports, talking about quarterbacks, talking about NBA players and the like. And if there was an argument that easy to make against those guys, it would be all the time. You hear it all the time. And maybe it's just a function of tennis not being scrutinized like that or not being talked about like that. But it does seem to me that Roger Federer has it easier than any other supposed GOAT, because that's a big yeah but to me. All right, he's the most accomplished tennis player of all time, but am I 100% sure he's the best when he loses to the other best guys in an individual sport where there's no other factors involved? You know, it's not about what the people in the stands are doing. It's not about your teammates. It's about you and the guy across the net from you.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
Me, CBS Sports Radio, and you, like Jimmy in Calgary. Jimmy, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Jimmy?
Hey, Robin. First-time caller. I'm just thinking about what you said about Federer and everything, and I've always thought about Federer as the GOAT, but you make up some good points, so I had to think of why I thought of Federer as the GOAT. And just the things about how when Nadal took long time off during injuries, Federer wouldn't do that and gave him a chance to always play at a high level. And Federer had that 4 or 5 year stretch later in his career before the last couple of years before he came back and won a bunch of tournaments. And, you know, he really hurt his record in that stretch. And on top of that, I mean, Djokovic and Nadal have a chance to become the best ever. But I think Federer, over the long term and what he's done so far and throughout the entirety of his career, still makes him the best until one of those guys do more.
So, wait, does it make him the best or the most accomplished, right? That's, I guess, where I'm drawing the distinction a little bit. And I'm not even weighing in exactly because I'm not, to be quite frank, I'm not informed enough to tell you definitively, right? But if I'm saying the best, right, if I'm saying he's the best, then why, when he's playing the other best, does he come out on the losing end more often than not?
Well, when he's at his best, I think he's always been better than them.
But then why hasn't he been at his best more than they've been at their best? Because the bottom line is the head-to-head record against Nadal is subpar. The head-to-head record against Djokovic is a losing one.
He spent more time playing them not in his prime as much as they've been in their prime.
You know, if this were another sport, that you know what you would hear back? If I was making that argument, somebody would say that you're making excuses. I'm not saying you're wrong, but this is the point of this conversation, Jimmy, and I don't mean to make an example of you. You're raising fine points. But the point of this conversation is typically in a GOAT conversation, you get a lot of holes poked in it. You know, there's a lot of scrutiny coming back the other way, and it feels like there's none for Federer when there is reason for it.
Yeah, it's a constant argument of what is the GOAT? Is it who is the best career or the best at their best?
Sure, but it becomes more complex, I think, when it's an individual sport. Because I would say it's who had the best. I mean, I think it's a combination of both. When I'm looking at other sports, I think it's a combination of both. Who had the best career and who was better at their top value, right? Like, you know, Shaquille O'Neal didn't have the longevity of some other guys, but he was better than a lot of them at their best, so I put him higher on a level. Wade, was his peak may have been up there with Kobe Bryant, but Kobe's career is greater, so Kobe gets the nod there, right? Like, so those distinctions play in. It's more nuanced in that sense. But when you're evaluating those players, you're taking a whole bunch of different factors into the argument because of the team dynamic of the sport. So it's partially who's the best at their best, who's the best for the longest, what, you know, they accomplished individually, what they accomplished as part of their teams. Tennis is not that because it's you versus the other guy. And when it's been him versus the other guy and the other guy is really good, he loses more often than he wins.
And who wins at 27 when the other guy's at 31? Or who wins at 35 when the other guy's 31 back the other way?
Well, I mean, you'd have to break that down for me. I'm welcome to be more informed on that. You'd have to show me, you know, is his record when he's from age 25 to 30, like, way better than the other? Because over the course of their careers, it's not, and they've played a lot. Like, it's not like Nadal and Federer have not played. They played, I think, 39 times now. And Nadal's win total is up over 20. Zeb in Oregon. Zeb, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, no, I just kind of followed up on what the last caller said. Age plays a lot to do with it in tennis. Basically, these guys, for the majority of their time, have been playing Federer, he's like the Michael Jordan with the Wizards. I mean, he's not supposed to be doing what he's doing now. Tennis players are like running backs. At 30, they fall off the face of the earth.
But Zeb, my commentary has zero to do with Friday. You know, by the way, I've been saying 23-15. It's 24-15 after Friday. Nadal head-to-head advantage over Federer, to be factually accurate. But that was only the entryway to this conversation, Zeb. Like, seeing Nadal beat Federer, because I was doing a different job in covering it, I saw the numbers. I got the statistics, and I was like, it hit me in the face. It slapped me across the face. I was like, wait a second, what? You know, and it wasn't because he beat him on Friday. That was just what got me looking into it. So this is not a reaction to an older Federer losing. This is a reaction to the body of work.
And I 100% agree with that, but I think you do have to take into account that he was the most dominant player in the world before Rafa or Joker showed up. He already was the most dominant number one player in the world, and they showed up and pushed him at the end of his career. I think that as a total, he's the GOAT right now, but it's going to be very short-lived because you have two more guys at his heels, and Nadal and Joker, who look like they're going to do the same thing he did and play till they're 37 or 38. I think it's extremely short-lived. I just think that people look at his career and look at how dominant he was, and then to come back and be world number one at 36, which is something you don't see, they go, oh, he's the GOAT. But when you look at his record and his overall stuff compared to Joker or Rafa barring injury 5 or 6 years from now, there's not going to be really a comparison. Those guys are going to blow him out of the water. I just think at this time, you have people who've seen him in both parts of his career. So I think that's why you're getting that response right now.
Okay, you know, that's a good point. You know, like if you're saying that the majority of those matches came when he was already, you know, in the second half of his career, then it's just poor timing, right? Again, I need to look that up and have all that. I think it's probably a little bit of both. But then he at a later age, comes back and regains the glory. And maybe that was the moment that he got coronated. And once you get coronated, you know, people don't typically take the crown off your head. But I do find it intriguing because it's an individual sport and because we're looking at head-to-head records. Wally in Las Vegas. Wally, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Wally?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
You know, I mean, first of all, it is 24-15. I was going to correct that, but you guys found it, and it wasn't including the last
I just forgot. I had looked it up before, you know, while he was in the midst of losing that, and I forgot to add the other number.
But first of all, it's not even a comparison. Roger Federer is not the greatest of all time in tennis. There's just no way. I mean, first of all, yes, he does have to play those guys when he's older than them, but that works the other way, too, because he was playing them when they were 18, and he was 22.
Yeah.
Okay? So you can take that argument to both sides. But the bottom line is, Nadal is 10-3 versus Roger Federer in Grand Slam tournaments, which, let's face it, when you're talking about GOATs, when you're talking about Brady, that's what you're talking about. You're talking about playoffs. You're talking about Super Bowls. It's the same way in tennis. You're talking about slams. He's 9-20 combined against Djokovic and Nadal in Grand Slams. There's never been any sport in history that has been beaten solidly by their two main rivals in their own era. There's just no way to make that argument.
There's a way to make it. People are making it, but you and I see a little bit more eye to eye on this. It's strange to me that it's been made without any pushback. I guess that's the ultimate thing. It's not even about me trying to say that Federer is not the best. You know, that's not my goal. I didn't sit out. You know, I have nothing against Roger Federer. I didn't feel any way about Roger Federer, to be honest with you. I felt no way, no emotions towards Roger Federer. No way this or that. But because it was happening right before a show I was doing, it became a topic. And when there's a topic, I try to do my best to inform myself on the topic and come up with my perspective, right? Like I do on this show. I do it long form here. And that was the thought that slapped me right across the face, because I looked at it and I was like, wait a second. You know, Nadal's pretty damn good himself. Look at his accomplishments. And he's the chief rival. It would be like if, you know, Larry Bird smacked Magic Johnson around, or vice versa. The reason that was a rivalry is because it went back and forth. You know, I think I said Brady and Manning before. That was considered until, like, Brady sort of ran away with it, right? And again, those are team sports. You could make the argument for Peyton Manning if you wanted. You could say, hey, Peyton Manning was actually better than Tom Brady, just wasn't in as good a circumstance. I disagree with that. I mean, I think Brady has the statistical profile now, the championship profile now, the head-to-head profile. Like, every box he checks, but I could at least see the argument being made. Obviously, in the NBA, we get into those debates all the time about, you know, is it ring count? Is it individual awards? Is it this or that, or various hypothetical circumstances? It's just hard to admit, you know, like in individual sports, you usually feel like it's a little bit more definitive. You know, who's better at running the 100 meter than Usain Bolt? Nobody. He's faster. His time is faster, right? He runs faster than, he won't forever. He's not, you know, in his absolute prime now. Who's better at swimming? Michael Phelps or the other swimmers? Michael Phelps. Right? Bolt is better. Phelps is better. How about just like tennis? Serena, right? There's no argument against Serena. Really. That's kind of, you, but Serena doesn't have that foil like that. Who's Serena's chief rival? She doesn't really even have one, right? Or else, you know, because the rival has to win. She might have so many people that give her trouble. But I don't think she's got anybody she's played 40 times and has a losing record to. That's for sure. So I really just find it kind of fascinating. Because it's an individual sport where it should maybe be more definitive even. And it seemed to be definitive. But then, at least from the consensus, and then when you look a little deeper and you look at the actual results, you wonder, at least I wonder. Like, you're never going to hear me say, like, definitively, Federer is the greatest tennis player of all time, which people had me convinced of, you know, until very recently. That's for sure. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227, at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. You know, I keep going back to this thought in my head, because we'll go back to the NBA Finals and whether or not you think it's over. I think it's over, whether Kevin Durant comes back or not. But I keep replaying some of the Kawhi Leonard post-game stuff in my head and just, you know, laughing at the unique sort of personality this guy is. And it makes me wonder, like, about his status, because his status sort of got put to the side, you know, in all this. Maybe because of that, because he's not like, Kawhi's not exactly a marketable guy, right? He's not really marketable. Now, I think that's a challenge for marketing people. I think it can easily be done, and, you know, you can have him answer questions in the very matter-of-fact wry way he does in a commercial, as a, you know, just stating the obvious, but doing it with a smile on his face. Or you could have all these executives try and pitch him and be like, Kawhi, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. And him just ignore them, lacing up his shoes, right? Getting ready to put his court work in, being about his business, not all that other business. And that's the commercial for Kawhi Leonard. But the point being, he's not that, you know, he may be considered by some the best player in the NBA now. He's making a case. But he's not like a star in the traditional sense. So we've spent all this time speculating about Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant's team is still playing in the finals too. I mean, I know it's different with him because he's not out on the court. And obviously, you know, Kyrie got eliminated, so we're talking about him. But Kawhi Leonard is in that group, certainly. And the speculation sort of quieted because he's in the finals, as it should. We should be focused on that basketball first. We should be focused on the NBA finals first. But now that they're up 3-1, I'm starting to think about his future a little bit because I feel like they're going to win this championship. Could he really leave Toronto after that? I mean, I couldn't predict what he's going to do. He's not the kind of guy I could predict. But it just seems hard for anyone. You know, maybe that the energy around the team doesn't matter to him. Maybe it's all about, you know, lifestyle. I don't know. I mean, clearly when he's on the court, it's all about winning. Clearly. You know, he's on his way. This would be the second three-peat he's ended. If he gets it done here, they get it done. No three-peat for Golden State. No three-peat for Miami. I mean, you cannot question what he does out on the court. But maybe what makes him tick otherwise could be different. You know, maybe he thinks he can go anywhere and win. Maybe it's weather. Maybe it's some other, like, you don't think it's like making movies and stuff with this guy. But could, you know, like, we have never been in a situation, I think, where you got a player on the cusp of winning the championship and he's been talked about as if it's more likely he's leaving than staying. Right? Like, that's been the general consensus, I think, is it's more likely he's leaving than staying. My instinct just tells me that can't be the case. It feels like the perfect fit. You know, he's made Toronto a thing. He's given them an identity. They're about to win. The city is enraptured. The country is enraptured. Could Kawhi really leave the Raptors? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. What do you think? It's the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.